All right, let's see how this goes. We're going to talk about another book today, as you know from the title of the podcast. Someday is Today, 22 Simple, Actionable Ways to Propel Your Creative Life. Who wrote this? There's a library barcode over the author's name on the front cover. Where's the fucking... Matthew Dix. So I heard about this book from a Art of Manliness podcast. I read this a couple of months ago, and so I'm just now getting around to talking about it. When, in the previous episode, when I searched for 40 minutes to find the notes for the book discussion I did then, I also found the notes for this one because they were in the same place. Anyhow, got this book, and it's actually overdue at the library, so I need to do this podcast today so I can take it back. So obviously, when I heard the guy on Art of Manliness, you know, he sounded like he made some sense and he said some good stuff. That's why I wanted to read the book. He did talk about on the podcast, and he talks about it in the book also, one thing that I've implemented, and it works, it's good. I don't know if I've said this on the podcast before, but he flosses his teeth when he's in the shower. And I thought, man, you know, because I'm bad at flossing my teeth, that sounds like a great idea. So I threw some floss in the shower, and when I take a shower, I floss my teeth, and damn if it doesn't work. So anyhow, he is very much into productivity. So the first question is, should you read this book? You should read this book if you are looking for ways and ideas on how to increase your productivity. There's a lot of shit in here that's pretty obvious. Like, for example, don't spend all day playing Star Wars, right? He does throw out some stuff like the flossing in the shower. You know, tie something that needs to be done to something else you always do. What needs to be done? Flossing your teeth. What do you always do? Take a shower. Well, at least I don't know about you. I take a shower. So there's some stuff in here that makes some good sense. It's a reasonably readable book in the sense that you can skip a lot of it. He spends, and I've got my pages that I'm going to read. So anyway, my brain's going in seven directions. Let me finish what I'm saying, then I'll move on. I'm just gonna take off down a fucking a different path. He says a lot of things that are obvious. There's a lot of personal stories. Like he'll say, I don't remember if I have any examples of this referenced as something to read. I'm going to guess I probably don't. But he'll say something like, don't try to multitask. Because if you're trying to bounce between two different things, you can't really focus on, you're not going to do a good job. If you monotask, you're going to do better, okay? So he'll spend five pages telling personal stories to emphasize what he just said. All you need to read is the don't try to multitask, do one thing at a time, and you'll do it faster and more efficiently. And then you can skip the next five pages. So a significant part of the book, I would say that literally Hitler, at least 15% of this book is just him telling stories to emphasize his point, which you can completely skip. So you can kind of skim through it. You can get ideas. Now, I've also noticed this trend because I've read a number of books recently, and by recently, I mean over the last like 6 months, and a number of them I want to talk about on this podcast. I haven't got to it, but I've got the notes. I found all my notes on all the books I want to talk about. There's a trend I've noticed in books now because I've read a number of books, as I just stated, for those of you who are paying attention, and I just like to repeat myself because I pad the podcast out to 17 hours for some reason, apparently. And these books are about things like this, like 22 simple, actionable ways to propel your creative life. And it's really kind of, I mean, he puts all this in the context of being more creative because he's an author, right? And he talks about how, well, you know, some people, they need to sit down for hours at a time and write their book. And he talks about how, you know, he writes his books in like 15-minute chunks on his cell phone. He just writes. If he has 5 minutes here and there, he just stops and he writes a couple of sentences for the book that he's working on. So I give the guy credit. He is very efficient. Almost to the point, you could read this and say the guy might be a little bit psycho. He talks about in the book how it's in his household, it's his job to put away the dishes in the dishwasher. And so he talks about how he tested different orders of events, sequences for putting the dishes away and timed them to see which was the most efficient. So he put away the glasses, then the plates, then the forks. You know, then you do the forks and the plate. And so he did all of this work and timed all the, to find out which was the fastest one. So he might be a little bit obsessive in some ways. But there are some good ideas in here. And there are some good ideas in here, not but. And he continues the trend that I have noticed in almost every book I have read lately that has been recommended by Art of Manliness, including I read a book, and I am pretty sure I did not put this in other people's podcast yet. It was one of the best other people's podcast, one of the best Art of Manliness podcast I'd listened to in a while. It was Brett was talking to the author of this book, and it was a really good conversation. They talked about a lot of interesting stuff. You could just tell, like, when two people are having a conversation and they're learning from each other, and it was just a very good conversation. And I was looking very forward to reading the book. And the book is essentially about if you shut the fuck up sometimes, it could be beneficial to you to not constantly talk all the time. Because you probably, I know that I work with some of these people, love them to death, but my God, I work with some people who cannot stop talking. As one of the girls I work with at one of the venues, we were talking one day about one of the people that I work with, and she's like, yeah, with him, there's never a moment of silence, is there? I'm like, no, there isn't. She says, yeah, he just doesn't understand comfortable silences. Those don't exist with him. I'm like, yeah, you're exactly right. So the whole book is about how just shutting the fuck up and not constantly talking. Well, the book was nowhere near as interesting. I'm not exactly sure what I was expecting in it. Perhaps like some kind of data or research or, you know, quote unquote studies. And yes, I know that half of it's not reproducible and all that other horseshit. But still, I was looking for some kind of tangible data driven something. I don't know. I'm not really sure. What I got was a book with an entire chapter dedicated to mansplaining. And endless passages about racism and homophobia and trannyism and sexism. And the virtue signaling was strong. Oh, the virtue signaling was strong. And so when you get a book that's titled Someday is Today, 22 Simple Actionable Ways to Propel Your Creative Life, you wouldn't necessarily expect that reading that book, you're going to have to read about homophobia and racism and sexism and mansplaining and global warming. But you are, because every book written in the current year has to have that virtue signaling in there. Everybody's got to talk. You know, it's got to have the chapter. The one about talking all the time. It's got the chapter, not a chapter. It's got some paragraphs about how, you know, we go to the family reunion and there's that one person who won't shut up and he's racist and sexist and homophobic, and how you just have to, how you deal with those right wingers. You know, there's nothing about the left wingers who won't shut up. It's only about the right wingers. So the virtue signaling is so fucking strong. The virtue signaling is strong in this book, Someday Is Today, by Matthew Dix. Matthew Dix is also a teacher. Not only is he a teacher, he teaches fifth grade. So on the one hand, with being a fifth grade teacher and the virtue signaling, it is difficult to take him seriously as a man, as an adult. And I don't know what apparently he's written a bunch of books. I don't know what he's written other than this book. I've never heard of him. It says right here, it says on the cover, author of Story Worthy. I don't know what Story Worthy is. But apparently he's an author who has written multiple books while teaching, which just goes to show you that teaching is not some kind of a full-time job. And in fact, he actually talks about his teaching job, and he talks about how other teachers complain about how they can't do all the work. And I'm paraphrasing, but he essentially says, it's just because you're not efficient. I'm a teacher full-time in a public school just like you. I teach my fifth graders and I write books and I have time to do my family life. So the problem here isn't the teaching. The problem is your lack of efficiency. So again, I'm honestly very conflicted about this book. There's a lot of reasons I would like to take Matthew out into a field and beat the shit out of him with a baseball bat. At the same time, he does have some good ideas and some moments of clarity, which is why I say this is a book. You could read it, you can skim it, you can blow past the personal stories, you can blow past the paragraphs on global warming, you can blow past the parts on mansplaining. Also, as an example, he talks about how in his fifth grade classroom, you know, you've got all these things that have to be done, like you feed the guinea pig and you take attendance and all this other stuff. And he says, well, I would delegate all of those jobs out to students, which is kind of brilliant. I mean, the kids are there. Again, just for the moment, can we sit aside that, yes, the purpose of public education is to indoctrinate children into being good little statists who need the government, because if you don't need the government doesn't need you, okay? Just sit all that aside for a second. Let's just pretend that the purpose of public school is to educate children and turn them into competent, functioning adults, okay? So giving fifth graders tasks to perform is a good thing, because they learn to perform tasks. They learn how to do, like, you got this fifth grader, you give her the job of taking attendance every day. Okay, well, now she's got some responsibility, she has a purpose, she feels good, she learns how to do this thing. People say, oh, she's the attendance taker. You know, there's a lot of good benefits to doing this. And then he talks about how I got even smarter. Instead of me delegating to the students who was gonna do what job, I pick one student and I have that student delegate all the other jobs to the other students. And then he can go write his book or whatever he's doing. And it's like, okay, that's pretty genius. And so when you hear all these teachers whining about how they can't get it done, you know, here's what you could do. Next time you hear a fucking public school teacher whining about how overworked she is, because statistically speaking, it's a woman, tell her about this book. Tell her to read this book written by a public school teacher who actually knows how to manage his time and to be efficient and does the same job she does and has way more free time and doesn't spend a bunch of time whining. And one of the best things in this book, one of the funniest things in this book, isn't actually necessarily written by him, but it's this little bit right here. So we're going to start chugging through the book. Like the previous podcast, I'm going to read a section, then I'm going to pause the recording and look at my page numbers and read ahead, because I have no idea what I have marked for reading, because it's been months since I read this book, as I just said. Oh, by the way, I got some emails and comments on the website talking about the Ukraine-Russia conflict, where I talked about why is this shit taking so long, what's going on. So yeah, thank you everybody for those comments. I'm going to, in theory, do a podcast in the near future-ish and, you know, just talk about those and what you guys said and do some analysis on that and some thought on it. So I appreciate the information everyone sent about the Russian-Ukraine marketing campaign for Global Homo. All right, here we go. Even as a nice quote, people who enjoy meetings should not be in charge of anything. Thomas Sowell. So at least he knows who Thomas Sowell is. Probably because Thomas is black, not because Thomas actually is number one, intelligent, and number two, understands economics. Okay, in the book, and this is the fucking, guys, if you're gonna title your book, can you fucking not make the title of your book an entire paragraph? In the book, Simple Sabotage, a modern field manual for detecting and rooting out everyday behaviors that undermine your workplace. Whew. Authors Robert M. Galford, Bob Frisch, and Carrie Green examine the Simple Sabotage Field Manual, a guide published by the OSS, the predecessor of the CIA, in 1944 to assist European spies in undermining the Axis powers from within. The authors examine eight techniques outlined in the field manual that are eerily similar to what often goes on in workplaces today. Here are the eight tactics the OSS recommended for tripping up Axis agencies from the inside. And tell me, for those of you who have had quote-unquote real jobs, tell me if any of this sounds familiar. Or maybe you don't even need a real job to encounter this. Number one, insist on doing everything through channels. Never permit shortcuts to be taken to expedite decisions. Number two, make speeches. Talk as frequently as possible and at great length. Illustrate your points by long anecdotes and accounts of personal experiences. He violates number two in this very book, where he says something really simple like, don't try to multitask, and then spends five pages giving you stories from his own personal experiences. Number three. Also, does any of this remind you of government? Number three, when possible, refer all matters to committees for further study and consideration. Attempt to make the committees as large as possible, never less than five people. Number four, bring up irrelevant issues as frequently as possible. If you've ever been to any business meetings, any of this sounding familiar? Number five, haggle over precise wordings of communications, minutes, and resolutions. Number six, refer back to a matter decided upon at the last meeting and attempt to reopen the question of the advisability of that decision. Number seven, advocate caution. Be reasonable and urge your fellow conferencees to be reasonable and to avoid haste, which might result in embarrassments or difficulties later on. And number eight, be worried about the propriety of any decision. For example, how would your decision affect homosexuals or women or colored people or trannies or vegans or Jews or any other protected, victimized group? Raise the question of whether it lies within the jurisdiction of the group or whether it might conflict with the policy of some higher echelon. I found that to be hilarious and truthful and terrifying. All right, let me pause and do my research here, and I'll be back. And what's somewhat humorous is that after I do this podcast, I am going to go take a cold shower, which we're about to talk about in the book, and then I'm going to go play Star Wars, which is exactly what you're not supposed to do if you want to be productive. However, I have been productive all day long previously, so I don't feel too bad about it. My feels. All right. Choose how to spend your time. Tell me if this sounds familiar. Tell me if you know any podcasters who have said this to you before. Remember, when you say you don't have enough time, you're actually saying there are other things more important to you. On your list of priorities, other items were higher on the list than the thing you didn't have enough time to complete. I didn't have enough time actually means it wasn't important enough to you. I didn't have enough time means it wasn't fun, distracting, profitable, gratifying, pleasurable, or urgent enough to place it at the top of your to-do list. I've been telling you guys that for ages. He also talks about how he and his wife have a system about who's responsible for what, right? Like she handles the dentist and doctor appointments. He handles taking the kids to sports, all that other stuff, having a system. He talks about how, you know, doing things in 10 minutes. And I think this is legit because I think a lot of people do this, including myself. Oh man, I got 10 minutes before I can do this thing. What am I going to do in 10 minutes? I'll just sit here and pick my nose for 10 minutes. And he's like, no, in 10 minutes, you can pay your bills, or you can, again, write a paragraph of your book or whatever. So use your time effectively. There's some shit he's wrong about. He talks about food. He minimizes the amount of time he eats. He spends, I can't talk, max minimizes, holy fuck. I choose to eat my lunch in a way that allows me to continue working so I can exit my school shortly after the final bell rings. Oatmeal is an excellent choice for me because it takes 2 minutes to cook and 3 minutes to eat. Okay, but oatmeal, despite as he goes on to talk about how oatmeal is going to save your life because it's so nutritious, oatmeal is not nutritious, and eating oatmeal 5 days a week for lunch is definitely not healthy. So don't take his food about nutrition. Don't take his food. OMG. Do not take his advice about food and nutrition. Do take his advice about showering. On the subject of showers and productivity, I also recommend cold showers except before sleep, which I'm done here. I'm going to go take a cold shower. Or, much more doable, spend the last 30 to 60 seconds of your shower in cold water. The benefits are surprisingly enormous and backed by science, science, science. Remember, the science is settled, my friends. According to Chris Ganimal, writing for Fast Company and quoted in a 2016 piece in Inc. magazine, a 2007 study, which Chris wasn't involved with, he's just a guy saying there's no link to the actual study, of course, because why would you provide a link to the study you're talking about? So this study may or may not exist. A 2007 study published by a molecular biologist named Nikolai Shuvakunk found evidence that cold showers can help treat depression symptoms, and if used regularly, might even be more effective than prescription antidepressants. Well, first of all, pretty much anything is more effective than prescription antidepressants. Because prescription antidepressants don't actually do anything to eliminate depression, because if they eliminated depression, you wouldn't need the antidepressants anymore, then the pharmaceutical corporations wouldn't make any money. But yes, a cold shower will make you feel better. As he says over here, after more than 2 years of standing in frigid water for a minute or more at a time at the end of every shower, here is what I can say about this practice. I think it works. I step out of every shower with more energy and alertness than ever before. Rather than feeling warm and relaxed, I feel alert and alive. I feel like I've accomplished something. I'm moving faster, and I feel more energized and excited about what is coming next. And I agree. Just end your shower with some cold water. You get out, you'll be feeling better. There's that. Where's the other fucking thing I was gonna... Did I blow past it already? Do, 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 do. He talks about, oh, he talks about efficient shopping. Go in, get what you need, get the fuck out. Yes, unless you're going to the grocery store to meet girls, then you need to take your time and check out the girls and look for them. But yeah, otherwise, he's completely right about that. Okay, here's a great story. And, okay, I didn't finish this speaking of stories. Speaking of wasting time by telling personal stories, I didn't finish this. So I almost wasn't going to do a podcast about this book just because of time constraints in my life. And, you know, I was sitting here. I'm like, all right, do I take this back to the library? Do I hang on to it and do a podcast? So I said, well, let me look at my notes. Let me open up to one of these pages and see what's in here that I think I want to talk about. And so the first thing I opened it up to was that thing I led off with about the tips from the OSS to screw stuff up. And I said, all right, even though this guy's kind of gay, there's some good stuff in this book and I need to do the podcast. Well, here's another good reason for me to have done this podcast. Page 209, leave performative productivity to the female lions. There was a time when scientists believed that the female lion was the hunter and the male lion lounged around all day waiting for the female to bring home the bacon. This assumption was made based upon scientific observation. Scientific observation. The science was settled, guys. This was scientific observation. Now, this is especially considering this guy's a fucking libtard, tranny loving, fag loving, you know, diversity, mansplaining, opposition, blah, blah, blah. Considering this is kind of an impressive story for him to tell. It was not hard to see. Female lions chased and killed the prey. Male lions did not. I wasn't sure how I felt about this. Part of me was annoyed with the male lion for disparaging our sex by acting like a lazy, good-for-nothing freeloader. The lion is supposed to be the king of the jungle, but he more closely resembled Archie Bunker. See, those male lions are lazy. See, men are lazy, guys. Women are doing all the work. Women do all the hunting. They're out chasing down the prey, and men are just lazy. We know this because of scientific observation. Okay? But another part of me was impressed by the male lion's ability to avoid hard work and allow someone else to do it for him. As a person who believes in delegating responsibility whenever possible, I found the male lion's approach to hunting appealed to my ongoing desire to increase productivity. He wasn't exactly writing a novel, building a business, or making art, but perhaps rolling in the mud, splashing in rivers, and endless napping are the lion's equivalent of those things. So I was conflicted, and he was conflicted because he's a beta male, right? He really wants to serve. He desperately wants to appease women because he doesn't want any white women to experience discomfort. So he's conflicted about this. I wasn't sure how I should feel about the male lion. Well, not anymore. Further research into lion behavior. So we see we had scientific observation. The science was settled. But then there was further research into lion behavior. Okay? Conducted purely... through the use of infrared drones, had discovered that male lions are just as active when it comes to hunting as female lions. That's not the money shot. Wait for it. So you see, observing the lions using cameras overhead at night and all this other stuff determined the lions do just as much hunting, the male lions do just as much hunting as the female lions. Allow me to read to you the next sentence. They simply hunt more efficiently. Oh, you mean the reason women can't accomplish as much as men do isn't because the patriarchy is holding them down and they're oppressed. It's because men are more efficient, because we don't have to spend an hour every day doing makeup and hair and putting tampons in our twats, and we don't have to spend 3 hours at work gossiping about the other girls and stabbing them in the back? Is that why maybe men are more productive and do more, even though it looks like we're doing less? Well, great one. How can you play Star Wars? Well, I don't know. Maybe because instead of spending the morning sitting around with my thumb up my ass on my cell phone posting selfies of my twat on OnlyFans. Well, actually, I shouldn't use that as an example because those girls are making more money than me. But instead of doing whatever it is girls do, I've been productive all day long. So you see, the male lions do just as much hunting as the female lions. They're just more efficient at it because we're men. We're better at doing things than women are. You're welcome. Rather than chasing antelope on the savanna under the hot African sun, male lions hunt at night by locating a game trail and positioning themselves in an ideal spot for ambushing unsuspecting prey. They use considerably fewer calories in this type of hunting, but are just as effective at finding and killing their prey as their female counterparts. It turns out that male lions are actually better hunters than lionesses. Wow, imagine that, guys. Male lions are better at hunting than female lions. Kind of like male humans are better at almost everything than females. I mean, other than whining and bleeding from between the legs, there's really nothing we can't do better than women. But the patriarchy is holding me down. No, sweetheart, it's not the patriarchy that's holding you back. It's you. You are holding you back. It would be ridiculous for me to find joy in this newfound knowledge because you're a beta male. Aside from being both male, these lions and I have nothing in common. That's true, because those lions... Well, you're not even a male. I mean, I guess... biologically, we could say that you're a male, but you're not much of one. Still, I do love the metaphor it offers. There are usually two or more ways to accomplish a goal, but so often people choose the way that is more publicly demonstrative, visibly active, and unquestionably effortful. They want to be seen as busy, even if their method of choice is not the most efficient way of getting things done. And he's right. Don't people want to look busy? Don't look busy. Just get shit done and move on with your life. Holy crap, I'm glad I decided to talk about this book, because I had literally forgotten how much of a fucking teacher / woman bashing extravaganza this is. All right, so we just read the story about the male lion is more efficient than the female lion because he's smarter. So Matthew was in the early days, he was a DJ, like a wedding DJ. So we've got this story here. Let me read this to you. This has got it all. Women, patriarchy, men are better. Even libtard men like this guy are better. Teachers, did I say teachers? Teachers, women, patriarchy, men are better than women. Here we go. Years ago, I was standing at the photocopier waiting for copies of a spelling test to emerge from the machine when one of my colleagues asked if I had any plans for the weekend. I told her and everyone else in the room that my weekend was not looking good. Quote, two weddings, Friday and Saturday night. What the hell was I thinking? Unquote. Back then, I was still spinning disc and leading hordes of inebriated wedding guests through the chicken dance and the Macarena every weekend. I didn't exactly hate the job. I owned the company with my best friend Benji, as you know, and we worked together side by side most weekends, making newly married couples and their guests happy. It wasn't a bad way to spend Saturday night. But in June, as wedding season was heating up but summer vacation had yet to arrive, the job was a lot harder. Teaching children all week and working as a wedding DJ on the weekend could be exhausting. Thus my complaint that day about my weekend plans. At the end of the school day, as I was packing my bag, one of the teachers who had been in the copy room and heard my complaint knocked on the door. Can I talk to you for a minute? So, a woman, let's start here. Let's go ahead and start here. A woman to whom he was not speaking, just a woman who was in the room and overheard the conversation, came to him about what he said. Can I talk to you? Like, no, bitch. How about you mind your own fucking whore ass business? Do I come to you to talk to you about the stupid shit that I overhear you saying? No, I don't, because you're an incompetent, insignificant fucking whore who is beneath me. You're a public school teacher. You're a fucking sad excuse for a woman, and you should be dead. I don't bother you. How about you don't fucking bother me? But no, women can't do that, because women have to fucking shove their noses into everything. And for women, everything fucking hurts their goddamn feelings. She sounded serious, so I invited her to take a seat. Listen, she said, if any woman ever starts a fucking sentence in my direction with the word listen, it's going to take all of my self-control to not punch her in the fucking face. Listen, hey, fuck you, whore. Listen, she said, I'm sure this weekend is going to be hard for you, but you need to remember. Women don't understand why they're hated. See, this is the thing. Women don't understand why men hate them. I overheard a conversation you had with somebody else. Let me come and lecture you about your conversation. After school is over, on your time. Listen, she said, I'm sure this weekend is going to be hard for you, but you need to remember that most of the teachers in that room today are just squeaking by. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you princesses, when you took the job as teachers, did you not know how much the job paid? When you interviewed and before you accepted the job, did they not tell you the salary? Did you just go into this completely blind as to how much money you were going to make as a teacher? Oh, wait, why are you even working? Why aren't you being supported by your husband? Oh, that's right, because no man wants to marry you. You need to remember that most of the teachers in that room today are just squeaking by. If they want a vacation to Aruba, or buy a new car, or even go out for a fancy dinner, they need to save. They need to save. Oh my God, they're so oppressed. They need to save money if they want to go on vacation. I mean, guys, this is the most tragic fucking shit ever. How can we allow female teachers to endure this kind of hardship? They have to save money if they want to buy a new car. I cannot. I am fucking shocked. I am outraged at how the patriarchy is oppressing these heroes. These heroes who don't wear capes. Or even go out for a fancy dinner. They need to save for weeks or months or even years to make that happen. Most of them are on a fixed budget. The same paycheck week after week. But you'll probably earn a couple of thousand dollars this weekend, maybe more. Not everyone can do that, Matt. I'm sure that being a DJ is hard at times. Listen to her talking down to him. This is exactly true. See, not everyone can do what he's doing because he's a man. He can teach public school Monday through Friday. He can DJ weddings on the weekend because he's a man. He's competent. Even though he's a leftist and a fag and a feminist, he's still, even with all everything, even with his fucking loving trannies and fags and Democrats, with everything he's got going against him, he can still teach public school and DJ weddings on the weekend. None of you can do that because you're women. You're lazy. You're stupid. You're inefficient. You're incompetent. Men, even libtard men who think that homosexuality is wonderful, even libtard men are better than women. Not everyone can do that, Matt, because we're all women and you're a man. I'm sure that being a DJ is hard at times, but watch what you say when you're around people who can't do what you do. If some woman told me to watch what I say when I'm around people who can't do what I do, once again, I do not know if I would be able to control myself from punching her in the fucking face. You fucking women, who in the hell do you think you are to talk to a man, your superior, like this? And this is the problem in our society. He should, if he was a man, and if we weren't living in a fucking feminized society, he should have slapped the shit out of her. I'm totally serious. Not punch her in the face like I'm talking. Open hand, he should have just slapped her right across the face and told her to shut up. But women just think everybody in the world needs to be spoken down to by them. Watch what you say when you're around people who can't do what you do. Sweetheart, as men, we're around women. None of you women can do anything that we can do. I've never forgotten that advice. I think about it all the time. My colleague was preaching gratitude, and she was right. I should have been more grateful for the skills, good fortune, and wherewithal I had to launch a successful business that paid well and worked in concert with my teaching career. She had a point. I was capable of earning thousands of dollars in a single weekend, which is not possible for most people. I had more financial flexibility than many of my fellow teachers. Complaining about it was bad form. I sounded like an ungrateful, selfish jerk. But what I also heard was this. There was a day when you thought that being a wedding DJ might be both fun and a great source of extra income. You knew nothing about the wedding industry, even less about the responsibilities of a wedding DJ. You barely knew the music that needed to be played to get people to dance. But just a couple of years later, you and Benji were booking clients, turning away business, and constantly raising your prices. You had quickly gone from knowing nothing about the wedding industry to becoming one of the most sought-after DJ companies in the state. And how did he do that? How did he go from knowing nothing about weddings and DJing to being one of the most sought-after DJ companies in the state that was turning down business? He did a thing women don't do. It's called work. He put in effort. Instead of whining about how the patriarchy was holding him down, he just did things, learned shit, figured it out, analyzed his results, changed his approach, and kept doing more shit. Meanwhile, women walk around going, you know, we're poor and you shouldn't talk about your side gig around us because it might hurt our feelings. And that's just one of the gazillion reasons why women should not be allowed to have jobs, own property, sign contracts. All right, I did peg one. Here it comes. We got a lot going on here. All right, so he's at a school, he's given a speech, blah, blah, blah. And a kid says, I don't mean this as an insult, but your life has been awful, like really, really bad. How did you manage to survive all that stuff and stay positive and become who you are today? Not only had the young man heard some of my stories over the course of the previous hour, but he and his class had studied my biography online, watched many videos on my YouTube channel, read my storytelling book, even subscribed to my blog. He didn't know me well, but he knew about some of the struggles of my past, with which you are now also familiar. Kicked out of my childhood home at 18, arrested and tried for a crime I didn't commit, jailed, homeless, died twice from a bee sting at 12 and a head-on collision at 17, both requiring paramedics to perform CPR to restore my life, victim of a violent armed robbery, shared a bedroom with a goat, worked 50 hours a week while completing 2 full-time degree programs, slandered on a public scale by an anonymous coward contingent in an effort to destroy my life, a lifetime of PTSD, faggot, and left-handed. All that messy stuff had been my life. Now let's pause for a moment. Once again, he had all that going on, and yet he still managed to teach school full time and be a DJ on the weekend and make more money than all the women at the school who are also teachers, half of whom had their husbands pay for their college education. So once again, the man is, if a woman endured even a third of that, she would not be an author with books that have been published because women are incompetent. So you're really like, all right, you know, the guy overcome a lot of stuff. So now it continues, blah, 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 and blah, blah. Instead, I said this, quote, I never forgot how lucky I have been. The auditorium erupted in laughter, and I understood why. At the moment, I seemed anything but lucky. Here it comes, guys. I pressed on, quote, no, I'm serious. I'm an exceptionally fortunate person. Think about it. I'm a white, straight man living in the United States. Do you have any idea how many advantages those simple things have afforded me? If I was black, black is capitalized. If I was black, or gay, or a woman, my life would have been a hell of a lot harder. Oh! What a fucking fag. Oh, yeah, if you'd have been colored, your life would have been harder because you'd have a lower IQ. If you were a fag, your life would have been harder because you'd be obsessed with sticking your dick in other man's assholes and you'd have AIDS. If you were a woman, your life would be significantly harder because your IQ would be even lower than it was if you were colored, and you'd be obsessed with getting impregnated by alpha males, but not ever doing any work whatsoever and constantly protecting your feelings from being hurt. Just of a, oh, I'm a straight white male. I have so many privileges. That's the only reason I've done what I've done is because of the privileges for being a straight white man. I say it's, the guy's done work. The guy has accomplished, you know, some stuff. But he's such a pussy. All right, and that was it. The last thing I want to say about the book is that he does conclude the book with a series of action plans, which is good. There's very specific, detailed things for you to do to increase your productivity and your creativity. Some of the action plan items are dumb. Some of them are very obvious. Some of them are really good. Some of them will apply to you. Some will not. Once again, should you read this book? If you want to be more productive and or more creative, I recommend, yes, read the book. There are parts you can skim. Yes, you will have to ignore his pandering to women and trannies and fags and colored people. Despite, once again, I mean, you know, he's a man. Despite being a fucking retarded libtard who's into diversity and inclusion, I mean, despite all of that, he still has some good points. He can't help it. He's a man. Even the fucking most worthless men on earth are still better than almost every woman and colored person that's ever lived.